Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott, this stew of stars, right, that have got the Cowboys by the
Simsisms. Kahunas.
Kahunas there, and now it's uh-oh. You got a team, you know, by the kahunas, for lack of a better way to say it. He was like, oh, my kahunas are hurt. Holy cow.
Simsisms.
I feel like we've done this one before.
I think we have
kahunas,
one time.
Kahunas. The big kahunas. Not the big kahunas. But close enough. I know what you're saying. I see, that's the thing. I'm used to it by now. I don't even react anymore.
I don't know. I've been saying that wrong my whole life. I don't know if I ever really knew until the first time it was pointed out to me, like maybe last year when it happened. And
okay.
I just keep riding it. I don't care.
Question. If you have always been under the impression that the slang for testicles is kahuna, what in the world did you think when you first heard the term big kahuna? I mean,
it sounds the same when you say it right there. It sounds exactly the same way. That's where
I know.
I'm like, damn, what's the difference between what you just said and I just said? I don't know. Kahunas? Oh, okay. Kahuna. Kahune? I mean, I don't know. Damn, I think we're nitpicking a little there. All right. All right. I could say
kahune.
Just the normal. I'll say the normal phrase next time. All right.
Now, Kristen says, please don't.
Yeah.
All right. Will the Giants have the kahunas to pick a quarterback? With the sixth overall selection in the draft, they have been meeting with and they have been scouting the incoming class. Now, some could say, well, they're doing it because they might have an opportunity to trade down, so you have to have your own opinion about the guys so you can properly value what that player is worth. It's not the sixth spot. It's the player that you know the person is coming up to get. But still, they're spending a lot of time that could otherwise be spent on other positions scouting these quarterbacks. Joe Shane, GM of the Giants, said to Albert Breer of SI.com on this issue of the sixth overall pick, we don't want to be up here again. We don't want to be picking in the top 10. We have multiple needs. We're going into year three. People assume we're going quarterback, but we have other needs. If the quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, then we're getting the second best position player, not quarterback at 6, which is okay too. The player will really help us. Look, I mean, this was sold as, oh, they're not going to pick a quarterback. I look at that and I say, well, hell yeah, they're going to pick a quarterback. They're concerned that the best quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4. And the fallback is, well, we'll get the second best position player, and we're okay with that too, which means they want one of the top four quarterbacks.
I don't look at it that way. I think they're trying to put, like, you know, what do you want to say? You know, what's the phrasing? Put the glue back in the bottle or whatever the hell I'm trying to come there.
Toothpaste back in the tube.
Exactly. One of those damn things. One of those sticky white substances that's got to go back in the tube. Okay. And that's what I feel like they're doing. Early on in the process, he came on our show in the combine, right? And, oh, well, I mean, he's always injured. We got to get another quarterback. Well, he's been injured two out of the last 3 years. They kind of put all these signals. Somebody told Rich Eisen they have buyer's remorse with Daniel Jones. They put all these signals. And then it's like they got back together after the combine. They're like, wait, we have 700 other problems on our team other than the quarterback. Maybe we shouldn't just talk about that. Maybe he's not as bad as well we think he is, and maybe the team is not that great. And I feel like ever since then, they've, you know, trying to get out of that conversation. I don't think drafting a quarterback is a Giants move. It's year three. We're going to start Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, J.J. McCarthy, who's going to play quarterback? And let's just have a freaking disaster here for a team in year three. And let's just have more distractions and media stuff and just nobody play football. We'll just talk about quarterback. Like, I just don't see that being a Giants move. I don't, right? And that's where I think they came off that, or at least that realization at some point here in the process that they got to worry about other things.
There's three quick points I want to make. Yeah. First of all, maybe they are saying what they're saying now because they realized that their pursuit was too obvious and they were going to make it look like they tried and failed,
right,
which creates the same issues you're talking about.
Right.
If the Giants fans out there think these guys really wanted a quarterback and they just didn't get a quarterback, but they really wanted one, well, we're only going to count the days until Daniel Jones is gone. Secondly, I can't remember what the second point was, but I'll come back.
Thirdly, go ahead.
Thirdly, this item I saw yesterday about the Drew Lock contract, and you know, we went through weeks of contracts being worth up to this and up to that, and up to was the phrase other than all in of the offseason. Drew Lock signed a 1-year deal worth up to $8 million, but it was never couched that way. It was just called a 1-year, $5 million deal. Dan Dugan of The Athletic pointed out yesterday there's $3 million in incentives there, and they all flow from playing time. Why wasn't that out there when they signed him? I remember John Schneider talking about how Drew Lock chose to go to the Giants because he's going to compete with Daniel Jones. And they're like, oh, no, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. I wonder if when Lock was signed, somebody asked the agent to not shine a light on the incentive package because they're trying to find a sweet spot where they support Jones until they don't. But if everyone knows, and if that's a headline, when Drew Lock signs that he's got $3 million tied to playing time, maybe that erodes. And maybe it also exposes that they are thinking about drafting a quarterback. If they're hedging with Lock and have that incentive package tied to playing time, they're thinking maybe this guy's going to play at some point this year. Maybe they are looking at a quarterback to take over for next year. Oh, and here's the third point. It's the save your ass and ensure future employment take. The idea that if we take a quarterback this year and we stick with Jones, it's more likely Shane and Brian Daboll will be there next year at a time when Bill Belichick is going to be hovering. I just wonder how much of that is affecting, because we've seen that before. If we draft the quarterback, we possibly give ourselves enough time for everyone to find out if the quarterback can play. So we have more than a year. We go from being on the hot seat to being safe by having a quarterback that we have in our back pocket that we took with the sixth overall pick, who will make his debut next
year. They draft the quarterback at six and go
Dave Gettleman.
If they go, that's what I mean. If they draft the quarterback and go 6-11, their ass will be out of there. So I don't have to worry about it. The next guy will develop them. That's what's going to happen. Right, that's where they got to be careful. Like, you're right, that's part of the game, certainly, and playing that and doing that, and guys have done that. But gosh, I don't think we're at that, right? And I think, you know, like, to your point, they're trying to find that fine line of, we want to have somebody here that's a backup, but yet pushes Daniel Jones a little bit. And Drew Lock is that guy that's that fringe starter. He has starting caliber physical attributes that is definitely going to put pressure on Daniel Jones on a daily basis, because he's going to make a few throws where the team's going to be like, whoa, look at that. So Daniel Jones is going to have to be on his game. And I think that's where that's at, right? I get a sense, Mike, that they came out early talking about quarterbacks more because they were going, I hope somebody trades up to get a quarterback for us. And that's why they started down that road. And then they realized, oh, shit. Quarterback's going to go off the board 1, 2, 3, and 4, maybe. That doesn't really make sense anymore, and now we got to change our conversation a little bit. I feel like that's what happened. I don't know that for sure. Either way, I think we both can agree that this is a big draft for the Giants here. This really is, and they got to, you know, figure out how to fill a few holes with these young guys.
I still think that they're hopeful, quietly, discreetly, that one of the top four guys is there at six. And it'll be interesting to see if one of them is, right? If it goes Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and then you've got Nix and Penix and who else am I missing?
J.J. McCarthy.
Nix and Penix, McCarthy.
Yeah.
And May.
Right.
You know, we don't know what they think about May. I know what you think about May, but I keep seeing that other people like May. So I don't know what the hell to think about
it's
May.
It's going to go down. Yeah, don't worry. It's going to go down the wrong way. It is. I just get that
sense. What do you
mean? I just talk to people in football now too much, because now so many of the important decision makers are up to speed with a lot of the players. And like, Drake May's come up a number of times with me already, and people are like, I'm with you, Chris. I don't know what anybody is seeing. I don't really understand how anybody could look at that and go, that's the number three player in the draft, right? So I think as this goes on, he'll continue to fall down the conversation a little bit, and you're going to see Penix more in that spot with J.J. McCarthy as that 3 and 4 guy off the board.
Merrill Hodge, who was an analyst at ESPN for years, he had the comment recently that Drake Mayo gets you fired, especially
well,
if
he's scary.
Up to get him.
Yeah, he's scary. He's boom or bust. He really is. There's plays like we talk about where you go, wow, right? But then there's five plays after that where you go, whoa, like what that throw, that decision, why did you leave the pocket? And that's, you know, again, why we use the, or I use the phrase, you know, the phrase project a little bit when we broke it down not too long ago.
The whole thing really is this elaborate, bizarre game of chess and poker and what signals do you put out?
Well, the draft community can't get off of guys that they've already died on a hill. They're going to die on a hill with a guy for 8 years, right? You know,
a lot of people in the media.
Yeah,
a lot of people
won't get off it,
not
let
go of Drake May.
You know, 2 years ago, Spencer Rattler was going to be the number one pick in the draft. All these same people told me that. And then he couldn't even hold the starting job in Oklahoma to Caleb Williams. I mean, we can go down the list of who I was told was the guy, right, a year before, and then people won't get off it until it just becomes so obvious. And I feel like we got that a little bit going on with Drake May for sure.
It really is weird how, and it's human nature, just this basic resistance of admitting we were wrong. We're revisiting our narratives. You know, we put a lot of time into that narrative, and I really don't want to go back and tear it down and come up with a new narrative to replace it. I don't want to start doubting my narratives. I want to have all my narratives, you know, like hanging like suits on a what's that thing?
Hanger
in the closet on a bar. What's the bar? Is there a special name for the bar?
I don't know. You hang your suit on the hanger bar in the closet. I guess
suits
right.
down around the corner for the suits. All right. So Giants can't leave the 2024 draft without what, Chris?
Well, I think I look at it. We know they lost Xavier McKinney, right? So their safety. Where just an overall, do I think they need to get some sort of safety player in the draft at some point? Sure. I think the biggest thing, though, and I'm going to take a little liberty, is offensive difference maker. That I mean, there's no Saquon. You know, who's the go-to receiver, right? That, to me, is where I look at it more than anything. They got a lot of good at receiver, right? You like, you know, Jalin Hyatt and what he brought to the squad last year. I like Darius Slayton and all that. Yes, but who's going to be that guy that we can go to over and over again? Again, I think those guys are a little bit more specialized, take the top off the defense, shots down the field here and there, but they don't have the guy that they can go, wait, we could throw this ball to this guy 150 times. He's going to catch 105 of them, and he's going to make a number of plays. I feel like receiver is really the position I look at more than anything, Mike.
Well, and I'll throw it, and, you know, when you said offensive difference maker, I'm thinking this is broad, too. This is running back or receiver. Like, who is the star?
Exactly.
Who's the guy
exactly.
that's going to take the football and right. move it down the field?
Right.
Either by running with it or getting open and making a big catch. And Daniel Jones isn't good enough to turn Jalin Hyatt, Darius Slayton, Wandale Robinson, Isaiah Hodgins, Miles Boykin, and Isaiah McKenzie into star players.
Right.
Like, some quarterbacks are so good that these guys that you look at and say, then all of a sudden they become great because the quarterback gets the ball to them anywhere and everywhere they might be. And the passing game is so good that the running back becomes more effective than he otherwise would be because they're on their heels constantly defensively trying to take away the pass. The Giants just don't have, you know, I've been saying for years, make the offensive line better, make the offensive line better, and I still think the offensive line needs work, but you still got to have players who can do something positive on a consistent basis when you do get good blocking from the offense. And I'm with you. Where's the star? Saquon's gone. Where's the star at running back, receiver, or tight end? I mean, Darren Waller might retire. He hasn't played a whole lot.
Right. And he's got a knee issue.
You know, year or two anyway. Yeah, it had hamstring, never gets better. I mean, he's had many injury issues.
Right.
Who's the guy that is going to be the fantasy football darling?
Exactly.
The guy that's generating yards and touchdowns.
And make a defense
They don't have that.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
I think that's where it starts. You look at the defense of the Giants and you go, hey, there's the front seven. You know, the two linebackers they got, McFadden, Okereke, good. You know, we know Dexter Lawrence is real deal in the middle. You know, we got Thibodeau and Brian Burns on the edge now. So I don't look at anything as, like, urgent right there. I got a first-round corner and Deontay Banks from last year is damn good. You know, offensive line, I think by all due accounts, the bodies are there for it to be successful this year, where it shouldn't be the train wreck it was as long as it stays healthy. I think we're on it. I think it's difference maker on offense.
All right, let's pivot to the team that we have been talking about a lot. I mean, God, we've been talking about the Cowboys so much, they may put us on FS1.
Well, apparently Vinny, a.k.a. Jerry Jones, has your email. Oh, you've been communicating with him a lot.
I got more from Vince, and it's more profanity, but I think he's put in the asterisks now. He's not spelling out the whole word, but he's using it a lot. He's very upset with me today, but that's okay, Vince. I can take it. The Cowboys can't leave the 2024 draft without addressing what, Chris?
Well, I mean, the Cowboys got a lot of needs when you break it down. Cowboys are a little bit in that era, ooh, we got to flip over the team a little bit and make a transition from some of the older guys that have been good for the last few years and, you know, start with a new group a little bit, right? I mean, O-line is certainly one where you look at to go, okay, yeah, there's got to be something done there, you know. Lost their center, right? No more Tyron Smith. I got to think that's a part of the conversation, right? Linebackers, another one where I look at it and go, the Cowboys, it's been a number of years since they've had a really, good quality stand-up middle linebacker, right? I look at that. D-line, I also look at that. DeMarcus Lawrence getting up there in age. Mazi Smith, first year from Michigan, D-tackle last year, wasn't good. Right? What's the future of Micah Parsons? So there's a few things to look at here, but I think O-line, D-line is where it starts with me, Mike.
Well, and that O-line, once you develop the best offensive line in football, it's not going to stay that way forever. You're going to have to reload at some point. You're going to have other guys who can step in and take over. And it's not a sexy pick. People will be upset, as we were saying earlier in the week.
Yeah, right.
We get all jazzed up about the draft, and we want fantasy football names. We want guys who are going to score points, guys that we can bet on for their prop over-unders. Offensive linemen don't fall into those categories, but they allow everybody else in those categories to go out and get it done. And that's why the Cowboys had been so good in recent years, because they've had a great offensive line. So absolutely offensive line. And
Zach Martin's getting up there in age, right? I mean, it's coming to a head here where they got to think about it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. What were we going to say there?
No, it's fine. They got to be. I mean, obviously they need running back. That's a given.
Yeah,
you got to at least be thinking about some of these mid-level quarterbacks. Look how they found Dak Prescott in 2016, fourth round pick. I'd be scouting the guys beyond the top five. And if somebody sneaks through the cracks, because I don't know, are they grooming Trey Lance?
Well, I think I'm glad you're bringing that up.
Be ready for something. I feel like something next year.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like in their heart of hearts, they were you talked about it yesterday. Their next year, Dak Prescott, you got to go to free agency. So be it. I think that was part of the Trey Lance. We might be in that situation. Could Trey Lance be the guy that maybe takes over? Can he do that? Right? So I feel like that was what he was brought there for. Hey, top-end talent, he's a quarterback. You know, there's teams that feel like you can never have enough of those, let alone we got kind of a murky future here with the Dak Prescott situation. Maybe we could strike gold and he could be the guy that could save our ass here, right? That's what I feel like the move was made for. But, you know, again, how he looks in practice and what he's doing, we don't know. We haven't heard anything like that, or at least I haven't.
Or Chris, he's just a pawn in this leverage game to get Dak to want less than $60 million a year. Because, hey, you know, Dak has had them over a barrel. They put themselves over the barrel by not paying him after year three, by not paying him after year four, and then realizing after year five, they were screwed. And they did this four-year, $160 million contract that has no device for keeping him involuntarily after 4 years. Every reason to extend it after three, they haven't done it yet. And I just feel like they need to have something behind door number two, or Dak squeezes them even harder. I mean, I think at some point Dak decided, these guys screwed around with me and took every advantage of everything they could to delay paying me until they absolutely had to. Screw them for the rest of my time here. I am going to take advantage of all the leverage I have. Exactly as Jerry Jones would do if he was in that situation. Jerry Jones would be proud of the way Dak is squeezing them to the point where they have to be ready to let him walk. Okay, fine. What's your plan B? And if it's not Trey Lance, you better have somebody ready to go. Not as leverage, but as replacement for Dak Prescott.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, but you said Dak's got him. Dak has got him, and who knows? By Dak, by all due accounts, Dak's gone. He's out of practice, and he's seeing Trey Lance throw, and he's going, oh, you guys are stuck with me. Ho, ho, ho. Open up the Brinks. That guy can't throw. He never could. What'd you expect? Hey, I'm Dak Prescott, $60 million a year. We'll see. I don't know. They got Dallas, the more you dive into it, with what they've done in free agency, which is nothing, right? And then you look at the team, you just go, wow, you know, that's still good, don't get me wrong, but it's certainly not up there with the high-end teams. And you start to look at some of the players and go, well, it's time to refresh here. And guys like DeMarcus Lawrence, like we talked about, it's year 11. Zach Martin's up there in years, right? And then we got some other unproven commodities on the offensive line. They got some things to address there in Dallas for sure.
So basically, to bring it all home and to tie it back to how we started this segment, Dak Prescott has the Cowboys by the kahunas.
That's right. That.
All right, let's take a break. More NFC East draft needs. The Eagles and the Commanders next here on this Wednesday edition of PFT Live.
I think me and Howard just talked about that. I got to get in the Eagles Hall of Fame first, so that might help me. But obviously, yeah, that's something that I think about. You know, apparently, you know, it's all in everybody else's hands right now. But, you know, hopefully, one day, a few years from now is putting on a gold jacket, and I'll be looking forward to it. And I'll have the same exact family here, and then we all be celebrating.
Fletcher Cox retirement press conference. A lot of family there. It's Whoa. Great to see.
Got them all there.
Number one, to have that many people in your family. Number two, to have them all show up for the retirement. Drafted in 2012 and retiring after 12 seasons in Philadelphia. 6 Pro Bowls, 1 All-Pro. Hall of Fame, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's
now,
close.
You know how I feel.
It's close,
you know right. how I feel. I think the whole thing should be Deion Sanders' upper room. I think you shouldn't even have to debate. If there's a debate, then it's no. But they'd have to basically blow it all up and start over again to reform the Hall of Fame under that standard. So, I don't know. I think it'll take time. I don't think it'll be first ballot.
No, he's not first ballot. That's exactly right. But I do think he's worthy of that Hall of Fame conversation, right? Again, it's a guy, the stats aren't necessarily going to do him justification in that department, right? He is an F the play up guy like we talk about. He is a, wait, hold your ground. There's 4 people trying to block you. No big deal. Just hold them all up so everybody else can make a tackle, right? He's a little bit of that. He was definitely a part of the conversation, right? Outside of J.J. Watt and Aaron Donald there for a little while, but you'd go, ooh, after that, Fletcher Cox might be the best defensive tackle in football and a part of a lot of great defenses. You know, I would not be shocked to see him get in, but like you said, not on like the first 2 years. Maybe a wait, like a Richard Seymour type of wait, that type of thing I could see happening for Fletcher Cox.
Having that Super Bowl ring will help, too.
Yes.
Without that,
yeah,
it might not happen.
If he had 2, I think he'd go, yeah, he's definitely going to get in. Now, yeah, it's a little more
held that 10-point lead in the second half of Super Bowl 57, it might be a no-brainer for him. All right, draft needs for the Eagles. They cannot leave the 2024 selection meeting without addressing what?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, don't even go to the draft, the Eagles. You guys are good enough. You got enough good players. I mean, damn, you got an all-star team. I'm sick of it. My NFC East rivals, the Eagles, I mean, they're perfectly formulated. They really are. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing how damn good they are. You know, safety's not even an issue anymore. You know, because they got the kid, Sidney Brown, they drafted out of Illinois. He'll be healthy and ready to go. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, they got Reed Blankenship, so I don't even feel bad about that. I think there's one position I look on the team and go, they definitely can use an infusing of young player there. And I don't know, that might be a Simsism infusing, but I'm throwing it in there.
No, I think you're good.
Okay, good. All right.
Accidentally.
But the cornerback, that would be the position I would look at, that they could look at. There's nothing that you look at right now, you go, ooh, they're desperate. This second, they need to get this position. But Bradbury didn't play great last year. Darius Slay, I want to say, is going to year 12, right? All right, so they got to start thinking not only of the future, but I think it's an area that they could use a little improvement in. So I look at corner as being that number one thing they got to get in this draft.
Yeah, I agree with you. These are all luxury picks.
It's incredible.
Trade down and stockpile picks for next year, but they might be in the same spot next year. They really are loaded. It makes their collapse down the stretch even more glaring when you consider how loaded they are.
Yeah.
I'm not thrilled with their backup quarterback options. I'm not with Kenny Pickett. They've already given up draft pick capital to get him from the Steelers. As you've said, they don't want anyone too good behind Jalen Hurts, because then you have a controversy and they don't want that because they're all in with Jalen Hurts. But how do I feel about this team if Hurts gets injured? That's the big question mark. And I would feel better if they had a better backup quarterback. Not that you go out and you draft one and develop one and he's ready to go as a rookie. I don't think with these guys they have. They added Will Greer recently. Tanner McKee is on the third string. Kenny Pickett locked in at number two. That's what causes this season to go sideways if you have an injury to Jalen Hurts that actually is acknowledged and acted upon, unlike last year's knee injury that everybody knew he had, but they never disclosed. So that's my big concern. What happens if Hurts gets injured? I wish they had a better backup quarterback, but I don't think that's something you fix this year.
No.
But I would at least consider who's there when I get, into some of the later rounds. Who's still left? Does he have a skill set that matches Jalen Hurts, and would he be a good replacement? So I don't need two separate playbooks, one for Hurts and one for Kenny Pickett. I want a guy that's more seamlessly aligned to be the backup to Jalen Hurts. But again, it might not be something this year. But think about next year. Hey, at least you have that guy in the pipeline. They don't have a guy really in the pipeline who can be long-term backup to Jalen Hurts. And I feel like you need to have that position protected. You're stocked across the board. You need to have a good insurance policy when your most important player gets injured, if he does.
I think Kenny Pickett's going to be good backup. I'll disagree with you there. I think he's viable. He's played some ball. It's not going to be perfect. Yeah, he doesn't run like Jalen Hurts. I hear you there. But he is a pretty good athlete. I mean, he'll be able to keep the ball around the edge every now and then. They're not going to do quarterback design runs to the same capacity and stuff like that. But I think with them making that move, they're kind of saying, like, hey, we like this. We're comfortable with this. We think if Jalen gets hurt, offense might not be exactly the same, but we think he can run the offense with this type of football team and we'll still be okay, right? But, yeah, do they decide they want more of the Jalen Hurts type of guy in the system? Yeah, maybe they do that. Maybe they could. I could see that. I don't think it's a crazy thought, Mike.
All right, last but not least, thanks to the Giants in the NFC East, the Commanders, although they're kind of battling for.
Well, they're least. They're picking two. We're picking
they'll
six. They're least.
They'll have company from the Cowboys this year, potentially. The Commanders, they can't leave the 2024 draft without addressing what?
Washington's got a lot of holes, as we know, right? I think the two most glaring things, and this is obvious, and I don't think anybody that's been paying attention at all, obviously defensive end. They've done it with older guys that are solid players, but nobody there you're looking at and you go, oh, there's our starting DN for the next 5 years, right? DN and offensive tackle, plain and simple, right? There's nobody to write home about either one of those positions on the Washington Commanders football team. So that's where I look at it that needs to be addressed more than anything is those two spots. Tackle has been a kind of a trying to figure it out for a number of years here there in Washington. And defense end, Chase Young gone. They certainly have a hole there on their roster as well.
They've definitely got to address the pass rush after giving up on Sweat and Young. They picked up draft picks for them. Invest that capital in improving your front seven. They're clearly going to go quarterback at second overall. They do have a lot of work to do to get this team to where it needs to be. And hopefully they'll get enough of a team around the young quarterback before people come to the conclusion that the young quarterback isn't good enough. Not because of him, but because he got thrown out there at a time when the team wasn't ready around him. Sam Howell actually did well last year.
There are a lot of good things.
But there wasn't enough of a team around him for it to resonate. And he didn't do enough for new management to want to keep him around. So we're on the same page there. We need to take a break because there is some breaking news.
Whoa.
There is a long-term deal between a team and a player named Josh Allen, but not the first Josh Allen that you would think of.
Well, you shouldn't have done that. You should have let them hang, and they would have been like, damn, Josh Allen? What? And
But that's unfair. That's unfair. I hate to be that way. So it's not that one. I know it's a bad tease, but I don't want to piss people off by making them think we're going one way and we go the other way instead. Either way, we go away for a couple of minutes, and we'll be back with news about a new long-term contract next here on PMT. Josh Allen has a new deal, not the quarterback who probably should get a deal to replace his $43 million per year contract, but the defensive end who was not happy with the Jaguars for dragging their feet and applying the franchise tag after he had 17 and a half sacks last season, a franchise record. He has been an incredible player for the Jaguars. They take care of one of their own. Reportedly, it's a five-year extension, and this can get confusing at times because the language matters. Is it a five-year contract, or is it a five-year extension of the one-year franchise tag? Is it a six-year contract? How much is fully guaranteed at signing? We won't know that until the deal comes out, because now is the moment for the folks who are scurrying to be first in the thumb race to X to say it's a $150 million contract with $88 million guaranteed. That doesn't tell us when the Jaguars can step aside, how much is fully guaranteed at signing, how much becomes fully guaranteed after 1 year, which they practically can't get away from. We'll get the full breakdown when the deal comes out. But it was clearly enough to get Josh Allen to take it at a time when it felt like the Jaguars were content to let maybe the 2024 season ride out with Allen under the franchise tag.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, by all due accounts, we know how this goes. It says 5 years. It's basically probably means there's a three-year deal that they can get out of the last 2 years, right? We'll see where it goes. But, hey, a necessity. I think that's the big thing. Good for the Jaguars getting it done. I mean, we talk about it, like Josh Allen embodies all the things that you would want, you know, as far as, hey, we drafted him in the top 10. Hey, he's an awesome person, right? Anybody that's been around Josh Allen, it's positive vibes, and it's like he's happy to be at football and be that guy, right? So he embodies what you would want in your locker room, let alone you picked him. And we know, right, like last year, there was a reason they were in the market for trading for edge guys or even signing edge guys in prior to the 2023 season. They're worried about their pass rush. That's an issue. The trade deadline, they were flirting with people about, you know, trading for a pass rusher there. Trayvon Walker has not worked out to the extent of being the number one pick to this point. Josh Allen is that guy up front that you got to worry about. So, you know, good for him, good for them. I think it's smart, and he's a damn good football player.
And look, there were nine guys.
Yeah.
Who were tagged this year. Eight franchise, one transition tag. Seven of the nine have signed long-term deals. And the deadline for doing the long-term deal is still more than 3 months away. So much for it being a deadline-driven business. But you know what? It could be that the teams and the agents decided, hey, look, we're going to do this anyway on July 15th. Let's just do it now.
Excuse me.
So the guy's there for, God bless you. So the guy's there for the off-season program. Because right. Look at what happens. If he stays away from the full off-season, we do the deal on July 15, he's missed the offseason program. He's behind and we're behind. So let's just pretend it's July 15 and let's just do this deal now. It's in our interest. It's in your interest. And kudos to the now, look, on some of these deals, I look at them though and I say, like, maybe you should have just done the franchise tag. That's one of the reasons why we're getting the deals done. That, as I said, when Jalen Johnson did his deal, the offer is not going to be worse on July 15. It's only going to be better. Why are you not waiting? Why are you not depriving the team of services to get them to give you more money? So I don't know whether or not these are great deals from the player's standpoint. The bottom line is the deals are getting done. And with Josh Allen's, we'll get the full details. It looks like a good deal. We'll see what it is. But it gets him in there for the offseason program, along with six other guys who were tagged.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Let alone, I think it lets a team wait, like, you know, like you talked about a Dallas, they're getting out in front of it. They're just going to, hey, let's get it done. Let's account for it now. We got the draft. We got players. Wait, if we wanted to trade up and, you know, maybe get another pick in the first round, ooh, maybe we now have a little room because of how we did the Josh Allen thing, or even free agents after. Right? They'll be now more of a player because they're going to go, wait, we know what we are with Josh Allen. Wait, well, if they didn't, it'd be, to your point, wait, Josh still doesn't have a contract. He's asking for this, right? We can't sign this player because we're still worried about Josh Allen and figuring out that deal. know, I think it's the smart thing to go here. Now, the player, to your point there of like, yeah, does he squeeze every last dollar out of them? Probably not. But at the same time, by doing that, he's risking being on a one-year deal and he's getting hurt and not getting that deal. So he took the longevity and the security instead of squeezing them, and I'm never going to fault him for that.
It is a five-year contract, not five-year extension.
Okay.
He had the franchise tag available. So the whole thing is going to be scrutinized by, okay, he had the one-year deal in hand for whatever the franchise tag was. So is it 4 years with new money? They're going to play games potentially to try to bump it up. We'll get the full breakdown and we'll explain what it is. And it probably is 2 years fully guaranteed, I would guess. 2 years fully guaranteed. A third year that may have some
practical
partial guarantee that becomes vested later.
Right,
and then the last 2 years are team option. They're not meaningless unless they're filled up. Like if they put a bunch of that back-end bullcrap in there like the Tyreek Hill deal or the Davante Adams deal, then, yeah, the team isn't going to honor it. It's possible that you've got favorable years to the team on the back end, like the Jalen Johnson contract, the Madubuike contract, front-loaded to give the player more cash now. On the back end, reasonable numbers for the team. So, you know, you may, if you're the player, wish they were going to tear it up, but the numbers are actually good. We'll keep them around. So that's going to be the key, too. Are the years 4 and 5 real, or are they fugazi aimed at bumping up the average? That's why it's always important to wait for the details and not come to any broad conclusions about these numbers that get thrown out there without context, because 5 years, $150 million does not mean anything without knowing how it's structured, how it's paid, and when the Jaguars can say, see you later to Josh Allen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's right. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah, by all due guesstimations to what you're saying, what we've seen, our experience in this, yeah, it's probably somewhere realistically 3 years, $85 million, really, or something, maybe 88 or 90, something in that range. But yeah, we'll see, and we'll unpack those details tomorrow. But cool. It's cool to see, you know, It changing here. I don't remember this many franchise guys getting long-term contracts, right? This is rare. And, you know, this free agent year of we saw so many 1 and 3 year deals, right? I think we've seen a ton of that. I think it's encouraging this new approach. And then the not backloaded contract too, right? As far as why are teams doing that as much? I mean, I think that's you know, something different we've seen too as well here this year. There's a little bit of a changing of philosophy in the NFL and how they're spending money and doing these contracts.
And look, the goal for the player, if you can do it, get the first 2 years fully guaranteed and get what you would have gotten under the tag the first 2 years fully guaranteed. It takes away the risk that you're going to have a serious injury or you're just going to lose your fastball to the point where they don't tag you the second time, and then you're SOL. So you're trading in, and that's what it always is. I mean, I remember saying this with Dak Prescott when the Cowboys weren't able to get him signed. You're trading in your right to play 1 year under the tag and force them to give you a 20% raise in year two, 44% raise in year three. You're trading that in for the long-term deal. So what gets me to give up the bird in the hand? It can't just be a push. I need a little bit more. I need something. That's look, when Kirk Cousins was playing in Washington and his franchise tag was it went from $20 million to $24 million and they were offering him $16 million a year, well, on a long-term deal, well, of course I'm not going to take that.
Yeah,
I'll
right.
just take 20 this year
right.
and I'll take 24 next year.
right.
Screw your $16 million per year offer. That set the table for him to leave. So that power is out there. And look, we haven't seen anyone do it since him. There was also a defensive back for the Rams, Trumaine Johnson, who did the same thing the same year. He was tagged twice. He went to the Jets and got a big contract, never lived up to it, but he got the big contract. And I you know, some of these players, the farther you are away from the ball, the better chance you have to pull this off. 1 year of the tag, 2 years of the tag, and then become a free agent. Because nobody's going to tag you that third time. They're just not going to do it. And maybe that's what T. Higgins does with the Bengals. I don't know. Or maybe it's 1 year of the tag and then he walks away next year. But he and Antoine Winfield Jr. are the two that are left we'll push it right up to July 15 and see if it happens, Chris. My guess would be it doesn't happen for Higgins, and it does happen for Winfield.
That would be mine as well, right? Would agree. You know, there's more at play there in Cincinnati, the receiver position, Jamar Chase, all of that, right? Yeah, Antoine Winfield, it feels from anybody you talk to down there, he's a part of the long-term plan of the Bucks. They love him. He embodies the DNA of what they want there from Todd Bowles and Jason Light on the football team. Intense, brings it, detailed, true professional like you'd expect being the son of an ex-player. Yeah, I think I'm with you there. It gets a long-term gets done for Antoine Winfield.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, some would say Matt Rhule did a great job of embarrassing himself during his stint as coach of the Panthers. How did Bill Belichick embarrass Matt Rhule recently? You'll hear it directly from Rhule himself when PFT Live continues right after this. Okay, we're going to go out of order due to some minor technical realities. We're going to talk about what we were going to talk about later now, and that is the Tavondre Sweat arrest affidavit from over the weekend. Originally, there were reports that the arrest happened at 2:12 in the afternoon on Sunday. It actually happened late Saturday night. There was a two-car accident. The driver of the other car apparently left the scene. Tavondre Sweat was there. 4:41 a.m. local time is when police arrived. They detected a strong odor of alcohol, according to the police affidavit. They saw some swaying when they were doing the field sobriety testing. It was enough to justify a BAC test, blood alcohol concentration, 0.105. That's about 25% over the legal limit of 0.08. A long time ago, the legal limit was 0.1. And he would have been over that by 0.05 of a percentage point. But regardless, he was over the limit. He's got to deal with this now. It's bad timing. We talked about it at length the other day, bringing someone to your community who potentially will get behind the wheel of a car when he shouldn't and drive when he shouldn't after he drank excessively. And the other side of it too, and you know, we've posted about this, and people just look for anything and everything they can find to pretend to be offended about. That we're body shaming Tavondre Sweat by pointing out that he's got to drink a hell of a lot of alcohol to get to 0.105 at 366 pounds. I don't care that the guy weighs 366 pounds. The reality is you have to drink a hell of a lot of alcohol to get 366 pounds to 0.105%, because it's all driven by weight, body size, because it's a percentage of alcohol that makes its way into your bloodstream. The more blood you have, the more body you have, the more alcohol it takes to get to that percentage. It's a percentage, not a raw amount. So you got to drink a lot more. We've all seen the chart. You've got to drink a hell of a lot more if you're 366. So the guy was pounding him to get to 0.105. And the other reality too, the accident happens at 4:41. They do the BAC test at 6:05. You think it's gone down or you think it's gone up in those 80 minutes? Probably going down. So it was probably higher at the time of the accident, which means even more consumed than what it would have taken to get a 366-pound man to 0.105%, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, we're not shaming anybody. I mean, this is the show of we love big butts and big legs and big people. We talk about it all the time. Right? I mean, I'm more of like the bigger the better usually when it comes to defensive linemen. I mean, that's what I love. You hear me say that all the time. Certainly not shaming him, right? But, you know, the point is what you just made. The point is also that he's being evaluated like we talked about as far as for a long-term future investment for a football team. And he's already being evaluated, body shamed, whatever, by the NFL. And we talked about that yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, as far as him not weighing in at the Senior Bowl was definitely scary to people to begin with because weight was a concern. So, yeah, this is going to hurt Tavondre Sweat. It stinks for him. I mean, it does. He's definitely going to fall in the draft because of those two things right there. And this is just horrible timing for this to happen.
Only makes it worse, too, if his answers when he's questioned about this by teams aren't persuasive, aren't perceived as truthful. That could make it even worse. I mean, there's already an impact from this. You can only make it worse by how you explain it away when you have a chance to explain why you did what you did, how you did it, and why you didn't just pick up your cell phone device and punch the button and have an Uber come get you or a Lyft. I don't want to, you know, we don't have a deal with either one, but they're both out there. There are other ways too. There's cabs. Cabs are still out there if you want to try to find
Oh, I wish they'd come back. Gosh, especially in New York City, okay? Uber ruined New York City. I want cabs back.
Well,
okay?
There goes our Uber deal. I was trying to set us up for an Uber deal.
Damn.
And there it goes.
Don't worry.
All right, let's take a break. As promised, Bill Belichick, the impact he had on Matt Rhule, as told by Matt Rhule, next here on PFT Live.
He is so smart, has seen so much, that he can make the complex so simple that it humbles you and embarrasses you. I was embarrassed yesterday listening to him, how smart he is, how simple it was. He went, he went 4.5 hours with just with the coaches. Forget the clinic. Like, he came in and met with our coaching staff. And with 3.5 hours in, I was like, Coach, would you like a water, a cup of coffee? Would you like to use the restroom? Because I desperately had to use the restroom, you know? And he's like, I'm fine, Matt. And I was like, yes, sir. And just sitting there and just talking, right? And just his recall from things 15 years ago. And, you know, the only reason why we don't get through more information is because he's having to slow down to make sure you understand what he's saying. I mean, so you have this man who's a savant, right? Who's been a defensive coordinator. He's been a special teams coordinator. He's coached, you know, he could be an offensive coordinator. He's been a head coach twice. He's been a GM person. I mean, he's talking about football in a way that just, like, I mean, illuminates things and makes things so simple that you're like, oh my goodness. He is so smart, has seen so much.
That's on a loop. I could listen to that a couple of times, because as I listen to it, I wonder, Chris, it is Belichick and how much of it is Rhule? Does it have more of an impact on Rhule? Because we know how he did at Carolina. But yeah, Bill Belichick is a genius of geniuses, and he is a walking, talking, computerized encyclopedia of football. And you press the right button and you'll get 25 minutes on, you know, long snapping techniques in the 40s, for crying out loud. It really is something. It's been his passion his entire life. It's who he is. It's what he does. And even though he's not coaching a team, football is still coursing through his veins. And, you know, we saw pictures of him at Washington's spring practices where his son is defensive coordinator. He was at the Nebraska clinic, and he blew away Matt Rhule and his coaching staff there.
It's commonplace. Anybody that, like, Bill Belichick gets into a conversation with, when it becomes like, oh, really? Let's unpack some football and talk about it. People are blown away. I mean, again, you know, New England and what they did there, the process, everything about it, it's all genius. It's all Bill Belichick. It's all the attention to detail and a new way to look at things. And can we do this better? Can we be more efficient? The scouting department, all of it putting together. That's why he's the greatest of all time that way. He's got so much experience to talk about, let alone he's got the brains and the guts to try new things out and go, wait, I think this will work, even though it's never been done before and all that too. So he's cutting edge and innovative in a lot of ways as well. Bill is in, like, there's two camps of either Bill and the New England coaches didn't talk to you a whole lot, and then those coaches are like, oh, the Patriot guys think they invented football. They stink. It was all Tom Brady anyways. Or it's the, I know Bill Belichick, and he's the most intelligent person I've ever seen in my life. And that's kind of where the NFL world falls on Bill Belichick.
I'm curious about two financial issues before we move forward with our effort to predict where he'll be in 2025. Okay. Number one, how much did Nebraska pay him? Because I don't think he went there for free. How much did they pay him for that session? And I think there were multiple sessions at this clinic that he did. And second, how much would you pay him as an owner of a team to get him to consult on what the hell to do with this kickoff? Because wouldn't you want his input? Wouldn't you want to pay him a large amount of money, relatively speaking, to get his thoughts on what to do with this new kickoff play?
Yeah, I'd always be in favor of getting his thoughts. Now, Bill, he's got a boatload of money. We know that. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he went to Nebraska and he's known Matt Rhule for a long time and he just went, wait, yeah, I'll come there and do that. I'm going to Washington anyways. I would not be shocked, right? I wouldn't, but, you know, I guess, you know, more, I if you made me bet, I'd say they bet him, they paid him something. As far as the rest, yeah, I mean, sure. I'd pay him a lot of money to be a consultant. There's no doubt about that. I think what you got to worry about when you're that is just that, you know, what does it look like? I think that, like, we talk about, oh, whoa, we got a really talented backup quarterback, right? Oh, wait, we're hiring Belichick to come in and, you know, look over everything, right? You know, I think there's some teams, owners, GMs are going to go, wait, that, you know, doesn't look right. I feel like he's looking over me. My coach feels like he's looking over him. And that's maybe where it'll be done more quietly in the background, I would bet.
As Heath Ledger said, as the Joker in The Dark Knight, if you're good at something, never do it for free. I can't imagine that he went to Nebraska out of the goodness of his heart and talked and talked and talked and talked and opened the vault football-wise without getting fair compensation for it. And I would give him, if I was an owner, and I would do it discreetly. There's plenty of consulting that we don't know about that happens all the time. You know, Bill Parcells still consults with owners. They fly down to see him to pick his brain. Jimmy Johnson gets consulted with. There are ways to do it. And again, it would be worth seven figures to me as an owner to see what Bill Belichick says we should do about this kickoff. And then I would take it back and act like I came. Nathan, newspaper delivery.
I've been thinking about this. You know, I think this is what we should do. Yeah, right.
All right. What are our ideas for where Belichick will be next year, 2025? That's our draft. Where do you think he'll be?
Well, I mean, one, I don't think he's going to a rebuild, right? That'd be the first thing, and we said that, you know, early in the offseason. He's going to go somewhere where he knows, wait, there's a lot of pieces in place, and this could work out. So, I mean, this is a fun draft, and it's all hearsay and whatever. I'm going with the Eagles, right? First off, I think he's preferential to stay in the Northeast. I think that's one part of it. You know, I think there's part there. And then the team and where they are and their philosophy as an organization – you know, if Sirianni and company falter this year, I certainly would think that Belichick's towards the top of the list there in Philly.
Yeah, I think we've made this observation on the air before. If we haven't, or if we have, I apologize. I don't think Big Dom's going to be long for the Eagles if Bill Belichick takes over. I get a feeling Big Dom's tenure is going to be done, which could be a factor in whether or not Bill Belichick ultimately gets the job. I'm going to go with the Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Jerry Jones has openly talked about working with Bill Belichick. We thought it might happen this year. He doesn't like to pay coaches to not work. That saved Mike McCarthy for 2024. Come 25, you know, the cupboard may be bare by next year, but it could be Bill Belichick and Jerry Jones finally together.
Yeah, I hear you there. Certainly was on my list, and I'm going to stay in the NFC East and just continue down that path and go the New York Giants. Again, we got no idea here, but I do know that Bill Belichick respects and likes the Giants maybe more than any other organization in all of football. Right, we've talked about in the past that there was conversations years ago of like, well, in the NFL, would Bill leave New England and become the head coach of the New York Giants? I think if there was any place he would have left New England for, it would have been there, right? It's the Giants. It's, wait, we've had other coaches that were on these short-term contracts. We fired them, right? Dayball, oh, it's year three. If it doesn't work out, I'll throw the Giants into the conversation, even though I'm expecting it to work out and Dayball and the Giants to have a good year.
Next one for me, and this is still round two, but the next one for me is not coaching at all in 2025. You know, you've still got to find an owner that will hire him. You've got to find a fan base that will get behind it. Age discrimination is real when it comes to coaches and high-level front office positions in the NFL and low-level front office positions.
So where exactly is that destination? Where is that? Tell me.
Nowhere.
Oh.
Nowhere.
Oh, no.
Nowhere. Okay. He's going nowhere. I mean, that's 25.
You
nowhere.
Lost the draft.
Doesn't
you lost it with that pick
no.
right there.
What's his destination?
Right.
His destination is I'm hitchhiking. That's his destination. He's going nowhere. I mean, that's a possible outcome for next year. He doesn't get a job. He should, but there's a chance he doesn't. I mean, only one team interviewed him
this
year.
We know. Thanks for the Captain Obvious. Hey,
no,
I mean, he might not get a job. Thank you. Thanks for the spirit of the draft. This was your idea, and this is what you come with in round two?
That's one of the options.
Nowhere.
That's one of the options. He doesn't get a job. I'm trying to prove the point that the owners, you know, they don't sometimes know what they're doing. I know what I'm doing. I'm taking a break. When we return, one more round each, and my final pick will not be
somewhere. It'll be somewhere. It will go nowhere, and next pick will be somewhere.
All right, one more round. Bill Belichick, potential destinations or no destination for 2025. Chris, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to go. This is where it's hard, right? I mean, I think we did the most, I don't know, reasonable options, logical. I'm going to go to Chicago. Chicago Bears, all right? I mean, we know it's a big year for them, right? They're about to take Caleb Williams number one. And we've talked about the team. It's in a pretty good spot when you look at their roster, right? But if things don't go well, if it falls apart there this year, Bears need a new stadium, all that stuff. I could see, hey, Bill Belichick coming to town, save us, you know, put it on a banner and everything's good. And maybe he could turn around the organization. I'll go Bears.
I'm reluctant to share my next one because I don't know how I would feel about it happening.
Well, so it's the Vikings and the Steelers. Where are we going here?
Baru.
Damn, you're going to fire Kevin O'Connell already after all he's done?
If it would have to be a disaster. This year would have to be
Kevin O'Connell.
A total crap show. That is the premise. Thank you. It would have to be a complete and total disaster, like 2-15. The Wilfs are gigantic Giants fans, or they were before they bought the Vikings. So there would be, I think, an affinity for Bill Belichick. Why would you not? If you were a huge Giants fan, why would you not be interested in Bill Belichick if you think that's the thing that's going to fix you if they have a disastrous season?
Right.
It all hinges on a disastrous season. I don't think they'll have a disastrous season.
Damn.
Which is why that pick comes after Bill Belichick not coaching.
There's a new one. You got a new one. I can't believe it. We got somebody new. Right? Now it's not Kirk Cousins anymore. It's O'Connell. I love him.
Just for this exercise, it's all hypothetical. All right. Have a good day, everybody.
See you later.
See you Thursday. Bye, Chris.